6:45, quarter till 7. Sun has come up. Lights still twinkling red, white, and blue on a Crescent City connection. It is Tuesday, September 24th. The storm is heading to Florida, and we'll talk to the National Weather Service about that later on. Daniel Erspammer joins us now, CEO of the Pelican Institute, to talk about a brewing storm of tax reform in Baton Rouge. How you doing, Daniel?
Good morning, Tommy. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Let's talk about, I was talking to Steven Nelson yesterday, as a matter of fact, about this, and I can appreciate everything that he's saying, but I'm having a hard time believing politically that any of this is ever going to happen. Thoughts?
You know, this is the million-dollar question. Will there be the political will to actually get this across the finish line? I'm actually in Bossier today. I've been traveling the state, meeting with lawmakers to ask them this very question, and I don't have a definitive answer for you, but I can tell you there is appetite for change. There's appetite to do something. What I'm gathering from lawmakers is they're still not quite sure what, but they're eager to take some action.
Let me rephrase. Let's look at the context of this, okay? How did we get a tax code that is so complicated with so many carve-outs and exemptions?
That's a great question. The answer is we started with a pretty bad tax code, going back to really Huey Long, this idea that you had to come to Baton Rouge and kiss the ring in order to do business. And so we started with a tax code that punished economic growth, and instead of really diving in to solve it, we did this patchwork quilt of, we'll help this industry here and that industry there and this one over here. And so what we have is, you know, as we've talked about before, 432 pages of exemptions in the corporate tax code. And what that means, of course, if you give one person a break or one industry a break to raise the same amount of revenue, you got to tax everybody else more. And so we end up with these inflated rates that drive away business, drive away investment, and it's the worst of all worlds because they don't really fund government all that much either.
So what has changed politically in the environment? Because it started with under the Huey Long, go to Baton Rouge, kiss the ring, but then I guess it morphed into campaign support. I guess what I mean with Huey Long, it might have been not just, you know, kiss the ring. It might have been, you know, drop off the money. But then it morphed into campaign support. And I'm just wondering, you know, it's fine to talk about that and to have meetings like they did on last Wednesday. But I just think that once the session starts and the phones start ringing, I don't know. Tell me.
Well, here's the big thing that's changed. We can look around us and see that we are not keeping up. We have the only state in the Sun Belt that has out-migration. In fact, we're the third highest out-migration state in the country. Our kids and grandkids are leaving. You know, it's the one thing I hear consistently. I've spoken in 52 parishes in the last year, and what I hear regularly is my kids had to go to Texas to get a job, or my neighbors moved to Florida, or they went to North Carolina. So there's a palpable sense that Louisiana is falling far, far behind. And it used to be, honestly, even the last few years, we heard from folks saying, you know, Louisiana government sucks, but that's just kind of the way it is. Now we're hearing, we've got to fix this. I've got to bring my kids and grandkids home. And so, you know, whether it's anecdotes like that or the real facts of the fact that we have all these assets and yet we're the only state in our region that's stagnant and failing, there is a desire, maybe for the first time in a long time, to try to solve that problem.
And I understand all of that, but again, and I'm not trying to be cynical here, Daniel, but you know, during that session when you know the representative goes back to his office I'm going to make up some names here. It's like, Representative, this is Gary Carlson here. What the hell's going on over there? I'm worried about my tax credit here. What do you expect me to do here? I'm going to have to reevaluate my campaign contribution here or something. I thought we had an understanding. You see what I'm saying?
I do. And your cynicism, by the way. That was good. Well done. Your cynicism is well earned, because that's absolutely been the story of tax policy in Louisiana, and still remains so. So, I'm not here to tell you that the incentives have changed in terms of the lobbying class or any of that, but I can tell you that the leadership in Baton Rouge and mostly the citizens, right? I mean, the only thing that balances out big campaign contributions and big lobbying is for lawmakers to hear from their constituents. And I can tell you just anecdotally and talking to lots of citizens and lawmakers, they're starting to make their voices heard. And so that's the only way to balance out an entrenched status quo, is to make it politically popular back home with their voters to make change. And that's hard. People talk about change. They don't really want anything to change. And you've hit the nail on the head about what the biggest obstacle to getting this done is.
All right, let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back talking to Daniel Erspammer, CEO of the Pelican Institute. I do know that, it's the old thing, Daniel, of how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time. Maybe that's the way you go about this. I don't know. Is it going to be evolution or revolution when it comes to changing the state's tax code? We'll talk about it when we come back. 651, 9 till 7, Traffic Now, WWL. 6:55, 5 till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Daniel Erspammer, CEO of the Pelican Institute. We talked to Richard Nelson yesterday, Revenue Secretary, about his plans for tax reform. Daniel Erspammer's with the Pelican Institute. He's been saying the same thing, beating the same drum for a long time. Daniel, is there a way to go about this where it's like eating an elephant? You do it one bite at a time, or does it have to be, and can it be an evolution, not a revolution, or does it have to be a pretty substantial change?
I think there's something in the middle. I think there's certainly, you could construct this any way you wanted. And I think, what we would propose is directionally similar to what Secretary Nelson has said. Our proposal is moved to a flat tax on both individual and corporate immediately. That's the eating the elephant part. Mm-hmm. That's the big chunk, but it doesn't do the whole story. Eventually, what we want to do is get down to be genuinely competitive with our neighbors to a zero income tax rate, but do it without major disruption to the state. So, as we look at this, our model suggests that you could get to a 3.5% flat tax on both individual and corporate to begin, with a modest cut in growth of government, and you could solve that by dealing with some of the complexity that we talked about. But you don't have to do that all at once. Some of those you can phase down over time. I spoke to a legislator yesterday, actually, mm-hmm. who said, why don't we put a sunset on the on various tax breaks and tax incentives, and then look at maybe a stair step of phasing some of them out, keeping some of them. So I do think there's a middle ground here. The question, the further we go into removing complexity, the lower the rate can get. And that's the trade-off I know Secretary Nelson presented to the legislature last week, and what is the core of the discussion here.
Give me some benchmarks that we can look for. How do we know if it's going to be, when this is not going to be a special session, this is going to be during the regular session, correct, which is a fiscal session?
Probably. There is some conversation of a special session, but I think, we're operating under the assumption that it could come early, but likely happening in the regular session.
So give me some benchmarks. How do we know if it's going well or if it's going not so well? How are you going to be watching this, Daniel?
Yeah, I think we're going to be watching to see, is there alignment and leadership among the legislative leaders? Does the governor, the Senate president, and the speaker align and present a plan to the public and stump for it? Are we starting to see specifics discussed among legislators and the media? And are voters, our citizens, constituents, contacting and engaging with the legislature? And I think that there's a direct relationship between how bold the plan is and how engaged the public will be. To the extent it's small steps, I think you get people less excited, but the political risk inside that capital is perhaps less. On the other hand, you can excite your voter base and really give a spur to the economy, but you have to deal with political consequences. One last thing I'll mention is we've run a model on this, and just getting to a flat tax, In year one alone, the projections are $2 billion in new economic activity and 5,000 new jobs. This is how much this can spur the economy.
But there's a lot more involved when it comes to attracting businesses, right, with education and insurance rates and those kind of things as well?
No doubt about it, but the tax code has a huge impact overall.
Thank you, Daniel. Appreciate your time. Daniel Erspammer, CEO of the Pelican Institute. We're going to take a break. We come back. Talk to Bruce Jenelson, professor of public policy and political science at Duke University. He previously worked in the State Department and on a Middle East peace process about what's going on over with the Israel-Hamas war, Hezbollah, Lebanon, and more. And then we're going to talk to Mark Drews. Mark's the director of public works for Jefferson Parish about preventing flooding to Jefferson Parish like we saw in Francine. They can do it, but it would cost billions of dollars.